Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
We continue now in the second chapter of Paul's epistle to the Colossians, where we left off last Lord's Day. And let me read verses 1, 2, and 3. Colossians 2, verse 1. For I would that ye knew what great conflict I have for you, and for them at Laodicea, and for as many as have not seen my face in the flesh, that their hearts might be comforted, being knit together in love, and unto all riches of the full assurance of understanding, to the acknowledgement of the mystery of God, and of the Father, and of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Well, that is quite a mouthful. So let's try to figure out what it is that Paul is desiring for these believers. Believers that he loves, believers that he prays for, believers that he's concerned about, but believers that he has never met personally. But here's what he wants for them. What I desire for you, believers at Colossae, and for those at Laodicea, another city nearby with a church of the Lord Jesus Christ in it, and as many as have not seen my face in the flesh, anybody else in the same category, believers who have not personally known the Apostle Paul, and here's his desire, we might say his prayer for them, verse 2, that their hearts might be comforted. That's the first request. Being knit together in love, that's the second request. And unto all riches of the full assurance of understanding to the acknowledgement of the mystery of God and of the Father and of Christ in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. That's the third request. And that third one is quite a mouthful. So let's take them apart one by one. The first two rather quickly, and the last one will require quite a bit of investigation on our part. But first of all, he's praying that these believers might be comforted, recognizing that these believers were facing difficulties, trials, temptations, and persecutions. He wanted their hearts to be comforted. He wanted their hearts to be encouraged, to be strengthened, to be buoyed up, we might say, in their Christian walk, recognizing, as he did, that these believers were facing difficulties, recognizing, as he would today, that you and I, and all believers who are listening to this broadcast, and all who are reading this epistle, also have trials and challenges and difficulties. You know, one of the things that I have learned, I guess, by maturing, growing older, learning a little bit more about life, about people. I just passed my 55th birthday, for those of you who may be wondering. So I am well into the last part, I suppose, of the middle age, what is called the middle age of life, and I'm quickly approaching what is generally called old age. Now, those definitions, as we know, are pretty elastic, and I don't feel like I'm approaching old age. I don't feel like I'm even in the last stages of middle age, if you're wondering. I don't feel that way at all, and I thank the Lord for the measure of health that He has restored to me. I don't take it for granted. I have been through some periods where my health was not so good, in fact, very precarious, and where I did not feel good and even wondered if I was going to live, and if I lived, what the quality of my life would be. But God has been so gracious and restored to me a great measure of health, and I feel good. And as the saying goes, you're only as old or young as you feel. So I feel pretty young. But nevertheless, I have to acknowledge that life is passing me by. I have more than once within the last year or two been given the senior citizens discount at a fast food place without asking. That's the best part or the worst part. Without asking, I guess it's the worst part. Because if they look at me and just assume that I ought to have it without asking, then that may not be so good. Some of you know right where I am. You've been there too. I had a young lady one time, I think at a McDonald's, I ordered a cup of coffee and something else, and she asked me if I got the senior citizen discount. I think they offer a discount on coffee. And I said, I don't know. What's the age? And she didn't know. So I guess it's just whoever wants to claim it. If you feel old enough, look old enough, that you might qualify and are willing to put yourself in that category, willing to admit that you fit into the category of senior citizen, I guess they give it to you. Of course, I've lost track of how long ago I started getting material from AARP, American Association of Retired Persons, I think that's what it's called. It started, I think, when I was 50, so I've been getting that for several years. That really did, it didn't offend me, but it was a real eye-opener because it made me realize that this organization, which is very large and very influential and which lobbies for a lot of causes, some of which I would not be in sympathy with, they seem to be pretty strong on the social programs, and they're doing so in the names basically of all the people who are in this age category and are on their list, and they keep pushing the limit down so that they can have more and more people that they speak for. So that puts me in that category. And I don't remember if I've renewed my membership. I think I did take it out once, but it costs so little. It's only maybe like $8. So, and there are benefits involved. You get this magazine, which isn't worth all that much, but it does have a lot of interesting things in it about travel. And you have this card, this AARP card that says you belong to the American Association of Retired Persons, and that card is worth discounts. In fact, I suppose that card would get you a discount on a cup of coffee at a fast food place. That would prove that you're a senior citizen, and there are much more valuable discounts that are available. There are a lot of motels and hotels and so forth that have 10% senior citizen discount, and your card with AARP will enable you to get that. But I said all of that just to prove that I've lived long enough to have had some experience and to make some observations. That was the whole point. And I've lived long enough to realize that virtually everybody has difficulty in life. Maybe to put it a little more short, in a shorter phrase, life is hard. Life is hard for everybody. Now, when I was younger, I didn't realize that. I thought there were the people who had hard life, and then there were the people who had an easy life. There were the people who had what we might call misfortune, and there were people who had smooth sailing. And I thought, you know, there are the, to put it in a socialistic setting, the haves and the have-nots. They're the people who find life very difficult because they haven't gotten any of the breaks, and they're in the lower levels of society, and they have to do hard physical work, and they don't earn a lot of money, and they don't have a lot of benefits, and so they get sick and they're in poverty and life is hard. Or life is hard for people who have debilitating illness. And life is hard for people who have an accident or various misfortunes. But there are some people who seem to live a charmed life, and life for them is easy. You know what? Now that I'm 55, in fact a whole lot longer ago than that, I began to realize life is hard for everybody. I mean, really it is. I know people in my church that many would consider to live a charmed life, but I know better. I know something of the difficulties, the trials, the concerns, the frustrations, the pressures, the heartaches, the difficulties which they face. And I realize life is hard for them, just like life is hard for others. They may have been blessed with a good income, which will help them over some of the humps of life, but I can assure you that life is not easy for them. In fact, many times having some measure of wealth will just add to the pressures of life and add to the difficulties and the problems of life. Believe me, that is exactly so. It takes you a while to realize that. When you're young, and particularly if you didn't grow up in a family that had a lot of things, and you look around and you say, boy, if I just could arrive at an income level like that, if I could reach into that strata of society, things would sure be a whole lot easier. I wouldn't have to struggle like I did coming up and like I saw my parents do. And that's what I'm going to strive for, because then I can give my kids such a better life than what I had. And that's the goal of an awful lot of American parents, you know, to give their children a better life than they knew. But guess what? Money doesn't do it. The things that you considered difficult when you were growing up, that you associated with a lack of money, you couldn't buy the kinds of clothes that allowed you to be in the in crowd in school, or whatever language is being used to describe that class of people in this day and time, the cool crowd, the groovy crowd, the in crowd, I have no idea what it may be called today. But anyway, you didn't have the money to wear the nice clothes and to drive the nice car and to do the things that make it easier for young people in school. You were one of the ones that was, as it were, looking in from the outside into that group of students who seemed to have it all given to them, and they seemed to be popular, and they seemed to have the money, and they seemed to come from the good families, and they seemed to drive the nice cars, and to have the nice clothes, and that seemed to really make things easier for them, and to kind of smooth the way for them into life. And for you, it was a struggle. It was a lot harder, and you determined that if you were able to get an education or to be successful in business and to provide a better income for your family, then you were going to make sure that your kids didn't have that difficulty. Maybe you had to work hard to go to college. You know, I can certainly get sidetracked as I keep thinking about different things here. But I think about the difference in three generations between my father and myself and my children in regard to college. My father went to college, but the only way he could go, he grew up on a farm. His family had absolutely no money to send him to college, so when he finished high school, he stayed out of school for, I think, 3 years. I'll have to ask him now the details on this again, and worked a job for an agricultural extension agent or something like that in the county where he lived, and saved his money. And then he went to college, and that, of course, wasn't enough. He didn't save enough in 3 years to pay his way all the way through college, but he saved enough to get started, and then he worked while he was in college and basically worked his way through. He had to earn all the money necessary to send himself through college. He received absolutely no help from his father. His mother was dead, and he had no help from his father because his father had no help to offer. Wasn't that his father was cruel? His father just had no help to offer. So he paid his way all the way through college. All right, my situation. In my situation, my parents moved to a particular city where they wanted the children to go to college in order to make it easier for them to go. They relocated so that even though they didn't have the money to pay our tuition and college expenses, they were able to provide room and board for myself and my brother. I think when my sister came along, they were able to provide a little bit more. And I'm not sure about that. I need to ask about the details, so it really doesn't matter. But I'm under the impression that by that time, they were in a little bit better circumstances. But for my brother and myself, basically, all they could offer was room and board, and we had to work and pay tuition and buy our books and basically our clothes. We would get some clothes for birthdays and Christmas, but basically take care of our expenses. And you know what? I was thankful for that. That worked well. That was a big help, tremendous help for me to be able to do that. I considered myself most blessed because I saw some of my friends at college who were having to pay for room and board, and their parents weren't able to help them even with that or very much. And they had a whole lot harder time than I did to work and earn enough money to pay my tuition and my incidentals, my books and supplies and incidentals, though it was not easy, I never really thought of it as being that big of a struggle. I look back on it now and I sometimes say, how in the world did I do that? When I really think about what I did, and I won't go into those details, what jobs I had, how many hours I worked and so forth. But at the time, I was young and strong and optimistic and energetic, and it didn't really seem like that big a deal. I thought the Lord had been very gracious to me to provide that for me, and I frankly did not envy the students who had it all provided for them. I saw some of those students whose parents paid their whole way, and they didn't have to work, and you know what? For the most part, they did not do as well with their college studies as those who had to work. I've observed that, and I'm telling you that now. Some of you don't realize that. Some of you are in the category that I talked about, and you're trying to provide for your children so that they don't have to struggle like you did. And you're not going to require them to work, and they probably won't do as well. They probably won't do as well with their studies. They probably won't develop the strength of character. I'll tell you where a lot of those kids are, like that. They're still living at home, sponging off of mom and dad after they're done with college. They can't figure out what they really want to do. They go from one job to another job to another job. They just don't seem to have any aims and goals and drive. And a lot of that's because it was just too easy. Everything was provided for them, and they didn't really develop goals and strength of character. When you're working and paying for it yourself, you have to be a little more determined. It has to be important to you to do this. And you better figure out what you're going to do with it, not waste any time, and not be flopping around from major to major to major. And it's too valuable for that. You're working. You're paying for this. So, my father, he had to earn room and board and tuition for him to go to college. For myself, my generation, I just had to pay the tuition and the incidentals. My parents provided the room and board. My children, well, by the help and grace of God, for the most part, we're providing the whole thing for them. Well, not the whole thing. We're providing room, board, and tuition above what they're able to earn. They're basically expected to work while they're in college, at least, say, 10, 12 hours a week. Not what I consider to be an inordinate amount, not as much as I worked when I was in college. But we do expect them to work part-time, and we expect them to work in the summer and earn and save what money they can, and to apply their money toward their college education. And then what they need above that, by the help and grace of God, we are supplying. I think I would do it that way, even if I were very, very rich, because I've just learned that kids do better when they work that way. But I'm trying to show you the difference. You see, for my father, no help whatsoever, all on his own. For me, a certain measure of help available and provided, but I was on my own for the rest. And frankly, it was up to me to make the rest of it happen. For my children, basically, turn it the other way around. You work and do what you can, and we'll take care of the rest. You see, for my parents was, we'll provide this level, and you're responsible for the rest. For my children, it is, you take care of what you can. You show us that you're putting in a good faith effort, and we'll take care of the rest. In other words, they don't have to worry about whether there's going to be enough, whether they've worked hard enough, where they've earned enough. They're not going to have to figure out where can I get another job to earn some more money, to add some more hours and so forth, like I had to do when I was in school to make it work if it wasn't working with what I was doing. And, as I say, I know a lot of parents saw kids when I went through. This isn't just a modern-day phenomenon, though I think it's grown in our day, but I see an awful lot of parents who think the best thing they can do for their child is just pay their whole way. We don't want it to be hard for them like it was for us. Ah, dear friend, that may not be such a good idea. Who was it who wrote a book here recently about the World War II generation? Said that was America's greatest generation. Well, I think there were a lot of things about that, but part of it was just the work ethic. Coming out of the Depression, took a long time to come out of that depression, that crash of 1929. It took a whole decade or so to come out of that. In fact, this country didn't really begin to come out of it until World War II in the early 40s. That's when the country began to come out of it. And that World War II generation was a generation who had grown up in hardship and sacrifice and hard work and not a lot of things, not a lot of luxury, but they had a lot of character. They had the kind of character to win World War II, and they had the kind of character to come home after World War II and put the machinery to humming in America that catapulted America's economy into the greatest one in the world. If it wasn't before, it certainly was then, without question, without doubt. And I am concerned that in our day and time, people tend to have it so easy that they don't develop that kind of character. Not everybody, but kind of as a general trend. There seems to be an awful lot of taking things for granted, an awful lot of expectation. I'm due this, I'm owed this, this is my right, this is what everybody ought to have, and if I'm not getting that, then I'm going to demand it. It's got to be given to me. The government's got to provide it. Somebody's got to provide it. Not up to me to have to provide it. I expect it to be provided for me. Oh, that's not good. And I don't know how much of the weakness in our economy today is owing to, say, American jobs being shipped overseas. That's because of low wages. That seems to be what gets the blame for a lot of it. But I wonder how much of it is also just owing to the fact that people in some parts of the world are just a whole lot more industrious. They're a whole lot hungrier. They're willing to work harder. I don't know. I do believe that on the average, American workers are some of the best workers in all the world. They are skilled. They are honest for the most part. There's a lot of honesty and integrity. They are well-educated. They are, I started to use the word clever, but that's not really the word I wanted to use, but they seem to have a lot of know-how and to be able to take initiative and figure things out. And but you know what? I've been watching this influx of Hispanics or Latinos that we have so much of here in North Carolina. And when they first started coming, the assumption was that these are lazy people coming here to sponge off of the welfare programs that are available in America. Well, I'm sure there's a certain percentage of them that do that. If there are things available, somebody's going to always try to find a way to take advantage of that, to misuse that, to get a hold of that. But you know what? They've been here long enough now, and we're seeing enough evidence and testimonies to realize that many of these people, most of these people, are willing to work hard. And there are employers who tell me that they would rather hire Latinos than Americans. Because these people have a work ethic. They're willing to work hard. And here they are. And people are complaining. They're taking jobs away from Americans. Well, they wouldn't be if Americans were willing to work hard. I don't know. You say, well, I wouldn't want a job like that. Well, I probably wouldn't either. So in one sense, maybe we can say that's good. They want jobs that Americans don't want. Somebody has to do those jobs. That's fine. Let them do it. They're willing to. They're eager to. They're hungry enough to. Let them do it. Some of the hard, back-breaking jobs, the agricultural jobs, the bottom-rung construction jobs and so forth, that's the ones they're willing to do. That's the ones they want to do. Let them do it. The jobs that require a little more education and require an understanding of English and so forth, they're going to have to improve their skills before they're going to be able to do those. Now, if they work hard and learn the English language and get themselves educated, then they'll begin to move into those jobs as well. If they get too lazy in attitude and start wanting to enjoy all the good things without the hard work, then they'll be no more competitive than anybody else. So I think it all kind of works out in the end sometimes, but I'm afraid that we've raised a generation in America that expects too many things to be handed to them. Much of our government philosophy seems to have fostered that spirit. The government programs, the social programs, the welfare program seems to have fostered that spirit. The financial prosperity of our country seems to have fostered that spirit in the minds of many parents who basically had this attitude, I'm going to give my kid all the things that I didn't have, or I'm going to give my kid all the things that I had to work hard for, and he's not going to have to work and scrape and sacrifice for those things like I did. I'm going to provide them for him. And that may be noble, but it may not be very wise. It may not be developing the right kind of character. But what I started to say, all this got me off the track, but what I started to say was, you know what? Life is hard for everybody. There isn't any easy life. Because we live in a cursed world. We live in a world that is affected by sin and sorrow, and there's just no way to escape it. If God provides financial resources so that you can avoid some of the trials of life that have to do with poverty, there are just plenty of other difficulties that come along. You can't, in fact, as I already said, sometimes there are additional problems. In fact, always there are additional problems and pressures and difficulties that accompany a pleasant financial situation. You've just got more things to deal with, and more things to worry about, and more things to manage, and more things that can go wrong. And I'm telling you, I've lived long enough to watch it. Nobody that I know has an easy life. Nobody that I know has an easy life. Life is hard. And the people who sit around and envy others because they think they've got the easy life, they've got all the breaks, I've got the hard knocks, they've got all the breaks, you're wrong. But it is true that they may have, in some respects, in some areas, an easier life than you do, and it very well may be because they rolled up their sleeves and went to work for it, and you're sitting around waiting for it to happen. You think it happened to them because of lucky breaks, when it probably happened to them because of industry and hard work. As somebody has said, you make your own luck. Now, that's not entirely true, but there's a lot of truth to that. Actually, in the final analysis, we believe that God is in charge of all of these things, and He controls what happens, but there are some principles that operate there, and you can find them in God's Word. And God rewards those who are industrious, and God will refuse to reward those who are lazy or who are dishonest. And so life is hard. And Paul knows that even these Christians that he's writing to have difficulties in life. So his first prayer is that God will comfort their hearts. May God comfort your heart as well. Until next week, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.